On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, today's episode of the podcast is going to be another group episode. I'm going to have the guys introduce themselves really quickly, and then we are going to dive right in. So just first name, last name, org, position within your org, and anything relevant you guys want to share, and then we'll get going.
Cool. I'll go ahead and kick us off. I'm Goldie Simmons. Right now, I currently serve as the minor league performance coordinator with Chicago White Sox.
Trevor Swartz, I'm the physical performance coordinator for the Colorado Rockies, and this is the end of my seventh season.
Hey, I'm Joe Hudson. I'm a high A strength coach in Salem for the Boston Red Sox.
To be determined.
Yeah.
Well, Salem's coming back, right, this year?
Yeah, low A.
Okay, yeah, we did announce that.
I'm a strength coach in the Red Sox organization.
Wherever they decide to have teams, right? So this podcast episode, I want to do a discussion on assessments. I have had a bunch of group podcasts. We've done force plates, FRC, strength training, but I haven't done one on assessments. Two of you guys obviously are coordinators, and then Joe also has a private business. And I'm interested to hear how he kind of has his own spin on assessments there. So just to kick it off, what would your ideal assessment process look like? And I know this might vary from what you actually do versus what you would ideally do based on, you know, restrictions that you have or of space or time, or even, you know, baseball has like some stigmas where like you can't do certain things. So your ideal assessment, not your current assessment.
Yeah, for me, I kind of wearing two hats, being in pro ball, but also running a private sector business as well, where we deal a lot with more of the youth population. I'd say it really depends kind of which hat I'm wearing. Assessments that we do within the organization that are definitely different from the ones that I do in the private sector, both because of the age of the athletes that we're dealing with, but also because of the time that we have allotted for our assessments. So if you think in spring training, you're getting, you know, 100, 150, 200 athletes coming in that need assessments done in a pretty short amount of time, you know, with all the other entry intake work that they have to get done in that day. We don't have a ton of time to be able to go through this very, very in-depth, long duration assessment. Whereas in the private setting, we can really schedule something one-on-one and really take our time with that. So, you know, it's a little bit more, of a flow in professional baseball, where you got to kind of just get screen out the most important things that you can get done in a timely manner, and really from the private setting we can take more time and go a little bit more in depth, and then when we, as things come up, we can kind of screen those things out a little bit more. So I'll leave it at that for now, but that's just kind of my take on things.
Just to kind of back what Joe said there, I think time is of the essence, especially when you get to spring training. You get there and there's, you know, 180 athletes. I think being efficient is key. Obviously, you want to take your athletes through a comprehensive, you know, movement assessment, strength assessments, and power assessments. But I think honestly, like whatever you can do that is going to replicate or basically represent your organization, you know, your goals and ideas and philosophies, however you can portray that most efficiently, I think is going to be what's best or ideal. I know right now we go through a plethora of exams and screens and stuff like that for our athletes. But I mean, I feel like if you can be efficient with, you know, just anything I mean, it's going to make your spring training, you know, kick off to a better start. I know right now we do a lot of strength testing, lower body and upper body strength testing, you know, and a lot of it is rep max sensitive. But if I had a say so in how we modify, you know, from big leagues all the way down, I think utilizing isometric testing, you know, to get a one rep max would be most efficient. I know right now there's like force hooks out there, and you can utilize that on a force plate and get a lot of information in a timely manner on guys rather than having them go through, you know, an extensive warm-up protocol and then, you know, bang out 2 to 3 sets of warm-ups and then hit, you know, a 5 rep max. You know, just having something with isometrics involved that'll give you, you know, multiple areas of feedback would be most efficient and ideal. If I had anything to say about it.
Yeah, I think you guys touched on the biggest one is time. And I think time is the one where you really have to look at, is it a feasible thing? So does it fit into the model that you're doing? But also, how much time is that taking away from you with the athletes? So, and how long, like, time is the biggest thing, I think, that we can all agree on here. And I think the other thing we need to look at when it comes to assessments is subjective versus objective. So if we're talking about a subjective test, you're looking at, okay, what's the eye telling me? What is this looking like? Pretty much anecdotally. And then you look at an objective assessment where, okay, is this reliable? Is it valid? Is this feasible? Is it transferable throughout the organization? So I like Goldie's comment of, okay, it has to be a top down, which if you're not doing a unified assessment and you're doing kind of random stuff sporadically, you're not having the best use of your time with your athletes. So for me, it's picking something that's going to be as objective as you can. That way it takes out that guesswork, the subjective nature of things, but also having that fit in the framework of, is it transferable? Is it scalable? So talk about an ideal assessment. I know we're pretty lucky. Like, we work in professional sports. We all have access to force plates. For me, being around it that often, like, that to me is an ideal assessment for us across the board, because it shows force output of an athlete. But I think the other thing to couple with that, and again, it's the timing piece, is you look at like MoCap or like a biomechanics lab where you can actually like get nitty gritty with that. And to both of your guys' points, like, we don't have that time and space with 150 athletes in spring training. The goal isn't, let's do everybody a, you know, hour-long assessment in the MoCap lab and run this through. We need to be quick and efficient, because the goal at the end of the day is prep these guys to go play 140 or 162 games. So how do we utilize that time? What can we most get out of it? And I think, Joe, being in the private sector, you can do those longer assessments, those MoCap stuff, but that also costs money. So it's that fine line of what's going to be most efficient, what's objective, what's going to save us time, what's going to better utilize our time. So there's a lot of things that kind of play into what the ideal assessment is.
Yeah, I probably prefaced it.
Sorry, go for it.
No, I was just going to say, I probably should have prefaced it that there are people who are like, oh, why don't they do this assessment, this assessment, this assessment, that have never been in professional baseball to see a spring training physical or assessment day. It's absolutely insane. Is you got guys coming in all day, you got coaches trying to grab players to do random stuff, you got guys that have no idea where they're supposed to be going. They come to you, they got a sheet with a bunch of stuff to do, and you're like, all right, who's free at what time? Like, it's controlled chaos in a sense. And so, like you guys say, there is definitely ideal in the sense of your time and your resources that are available to you. So sorry to cut you off there, Goldie, but I probably should have prefaced that a little bit better for us.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that's a perfect point, because I was just going to tag on what Trevor said. And I think a lot of it boils down is to manpower. And I think organizations, you know, in this regard, they fail to realize how much actually goes into developing and implementing things with athletes, especially with that kind of volume. You know, they want to see all the analytics and the data, you know, like, everybody's going to this data driven process. And, you know, there's so much that goes into that. Like, Trevor talked about the biomechanics lab, you know, that one guy can't effectively run a biomechanics lab, but a lot of organizations will leave one guy to watch the force plate and utilize his computer, you know, without actually being able to get with the athlete and give them a full scope of what they're trying to do. He's just kind of watching his computer, you know, watching the video analysis. You know what I mean? And just hoping for the best. You know, I think right now we're at a time where, you know, the things that we're doing involve multiple eyes, you know, involve, you know, multiple people doing multiple things, you know, and when you have one guy, you know, trying to do an entire movement assessment, you know, all day, you know, he's going to miss some things, you know, like, we talk about that full scope, you know, trying to, you know, idea, like, our idea of what it is to break down an athlete, you know, one guy is not going to be able to do that. You know, basketball is very fortunate where they have, you know, they have three strength coaches and only 15 players, you know what I mean? So, you know, that player to coach ratio, you know, is stretched with baseball. And I think if we had the manpower to do certain things, I think this process would be a lot easier. So we talk about being ideal. I think having, you know, more men behind, you know, the lens, so to speak, would be optimal.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point too. Sorry, Joe. But I think also the big thing to take away is how are the athletes understanding what you're doing on them? So case in point, we had a new draft kid this year and he came in and he was like, man, like you guys actually explained what you guys did on the force plate with me. I understand what these numbers are. He's like, in college, and they did the exact same assessment we did that it's college. And he was like, I was never told what my numbers were. I didn't have an understanding. I was just given a workout card and told to go. So again, it goes back to the time thing. Like, use your time to educate your athletes. Don't give them just a battery of assessments to assess. Like, educate them on what they're doing and why, so they have an understanding of what's going on with them. Sorry, Joe.
No, no worries. I think that's important just because, you know, your longer term process is going to be a collaborative approach, right? You're much more likely to get buy-in from that athlete if he knows what these numbers mean. But going back to what I was going to say before, back to your point is, you know, and to Goldie's point really is, you know, these assessments as we're walking through them all in a day in the life during spring training, you know, you have that one guy that's doing, you know, a subjective test, like we'll say like a straight leg raise, you know, you're getting 150 straight leg raises throughout a 2 or 3 hour period, you know, something's going to give eventually there. Like, you know, all of a sudden that two becomes a one or that one becomes a two, just because you've seen 150 leg raises in a 2 hour span, just makes it difficult, I think, sometimes for, to get the most valid and reliable information.
Yeah, that was exactly what I was thinking. As soon as Goldie brought that up, it was like, if you have all these guys coming through, eventually you're going to get worn out. Like, it's human nature where, you know, we're all strength coaches. We're like, oh, we're tough. We're never tired, you know, but 6 hours later and you've done, you know, 200 straight leg raises, you're like, oh yeah, that's a two, that's a one. Like, and you got guys bugging you like, dude, come on, why are you taking so long? Like, can I just go to your station instead? Like, no, follow the line. Like, it wears on you, you know. And those guys, I mean, they have a lot going on that day too, but they like check the box, move to the next place, check the box, move to the next place. Where us, it's like, all right, I've done 9 million jumps today. Like, I'm sick of explaining to you that you have to pause on the plates before you jump. Like, it's little stuff like that that, again, I think people kind of bash baseball from the outside for certain things. And it's like, if you've never been in, like, you, there's finer details that you don't know that, like, okay, yeah, of course I would love to do this for my assessment, but I just can't. I don't have the people. I don't have the time. And you know, some people can say those are bad excuses, but until you've actually been in it, I agree with you guys. I think there's a difference between what is ideal and what could really be done and what's the most logical thing that we can do in our given situation.
Well, and to your point, Chris, too, like you kind of touched on it, it's the hardware too. If your hardware is not up to speed and is taken away, like that hinders the process of assessing. A couple of years ago, we had these old Kistler plates that, you know, they were a little janky, they'd traveled, they had wear and tear. And it would take us a full day to assess everybody on jump testing, counter movement jumps. So we would have 180 guys coming through basically. And it's like, warm up, you go jump, you get explained. So it was this whole process. Now with these new plates and the instantaneous feedback that we can get from them, because the hardware and software has come so far in the last 5 years, it's instantaneous now. So that whole process gets streamlined now to where it's like, okay, come in, warm up, jump, explain, done. Takes maybe 10 minutes for a guy. But back in like 5 years ago, even with force plates, which were cutting edge, it still is cutting edges, it took us probably a half hour per guy with the whole process because it took so long, because the hardware and software. So you have to look at what your limitations are as well. And is your hardware and software up to date?
Yeah, I can only imagine what the process was 5 years ago with force plates. It's still not, you know, absolutely 100% flawless, perfect nowadays. So I can only imagine what you were going through back in those days.
Yeah, a lot of issues.
Okay, so moving on to our next question here, the idea is that you can only pick one assessment or area of assessment. So obviously, we can assess strength, we can do power, we can do conditioning, mobility. There's a bunch of different areas that you can assess players to get the data that you're looking for. But if you had, again, and maybe this makes sense for us in the sense that we don't have a lot of time, if there's only one thing that you're going to pick, what area is it? You know, strength, conditioning, power, mobility, or what like implement are you using, like an FMS, a force play, an on-base U assessment? So basically just your one assessment that if you only had 5 minutes to assess a guy and tell me what you know about and what are you using?
I guess I'll start this one off. Like the first thing that came to my mind with this question was, you know, it's our job to optimize movement, right? So I want to see how well this guy moves. I want to do a very comprehensive movement analysis on this guy. And hopefully, you know, in this process, I can get some type of, you know, motion capture feedback at the same time, some type of video. That way I can also dial in later on. If this is all I got, you know, I'd like to not only see it with my own eyes subjectively, but then I'd also like to dial in objectively with some type of, you know, motion capture. And I think, you know, this kind of goes back to movement over maxes with Zach DeCant. I mean, he said it best, you know, he doesn't allow his athletes to move beyond, you know, movement until they can dial in, you know, that movement component. You know, it's almost like their blueprint. Like you start here, square one with the movement, and then you prove yourself as you go and being able to follow a very strict movement protocol. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty heavily biased on the force plate side of things, in case you guys can't tell. So for me, it's using the force plates. And to your point, like looking at how guys are moving, like I can see, you see thousands of these jump tests, counter movement jumps that we do. You see it and you can go, okay, I think it's going to be this. And then you see the object numbers and it's like, oh, that matches what I saw. Or there could be something else. I'm like, that's interesting. So for me, it's, I would use force plates. I think we're pretty, I think we have a pretty good system dialed in on our end. So using that to see how a guy's, his force output is. So you're looking at eccentric rate of force development, concentric rate of force development, and then concentric impulse. So you're looking at those three variables to give you a picture of what this guy looks like. And again, it's that snapshot in that window. We jump guys every 2 to 3 weeks because we want to see what training stimulus does. We want to see what the game does. We're trying to see this continuous every 2 weeks. Okay, what's this guy, what are these implementations doing on this athlete? So, keeping it simple, but also using it to go, okay, we can do this pretty regularly to see exactly where a guy's at. I think that's the biggest thing for me is I want to be able to test, retest quickly and efficiently throughout the course of the season or an off season and see what is going on with this athlete. And that's where objectively force plates give us that pretty clear picture, at least on our end. So.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to say I agree with both of you guys. And, you know, kind of going back to Goldie's point with the movement stuff, I'm definitely going to favor that or bias that a little bit more with my private clientele in the private setting, just because I want to be able to see how these guys move. You know, we get athletes in that sometimes have had some sort of training experience and have a decent training age, and then we get some where this is their first time. So, you know, I feel like I wouldn't be doing my job well if I didn't at least go through a screening, something like the movement screen or the FMS in a non-base U protocol of some sort or some sort of blend of all of that, just to see how they move. And then when it comes to the professional setting, I think I'm going to favor more the force plate stuff. I think there's a lot of cool things that you can do outside of just counter movement jump and isometric testing. And I think as we more clubs and more facilities get familiar with that stuff, we'll be able to continue to kind of push the envelope there with some other interesting tests as well. I'd say private setting, younger athletes, I'm going to go heavy on the movement screen and the professional side, probably more towards the force plate. Sorry, I had to change rooms.
No, you're good. It's a different background. That's okay though.
Yeah.
So same question, but instead of most important, least important, and this one might stir the pot with certain people. So again, if you're looking at, you know, power assessment, strength testing, movement assessments, conditioning tests, which one are you least likely to do in your battery that's going to give you information for long-term quote-unquote success, however you define success?
I think for me, you know, and this is very just my thought here. Like, this is by no means an end-all be-all, but I think the endurance test, like anything that involves, you know, long durations, you know, right now we kind of do like a cone hop test and then a repeat cone hop test, but it's not so much to look at a guy's endurance. It's more so just to look at a guy's ability to recover. But it doesn't really tell you too much about a guy. It's very subjective in nature. And I just think with a sport that relies heavily on explosive movements, you know, being fast, reactive, you know, just looking into things that are endurance based, just don't really tell you a whole lot about what a guy's capable of doing on field or the on field demands necessary. So.
Yeah. The 300 yard shuttle run going back and forth. I think that's where, and I was listening to another podcast that Buddy Morris was on, and he was talking about it. He goes, that's just why are you doing that? You're never going to have a guy run like that in a game. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to keep it as sport specific as possible, but also like, how does this work in the confines of your, like in the confines of your sport, but also like, is this an important conditioning test in baseball? For me, when you're talking about doing an endurance test, it doesn't really fit the model. It doesn't fit the sport, doesn't fit the model. It's not going to give me anything that's inherently useful. So that one probably is my go-to for the least, but again, it's if you can convince me otherwise and show me like, hey, this is why, this is how it's impacting the players, then sure, I'll be open to it. But from what I've read, what I've seen, and what my staff, we do a pretty good group discussion as far as what we want to do. If you can convince us to go for something like that, then sure, but we haven't read anything to convince us otherwise. So if there's compelling evidence to support it, I'm in. But for me, it's the endurance testing. You're not going to really glean any information off of that.
Yeah, I'd like to, I think, again, going back to kind of separating, I'd almost flip-flop my responses from the last question and say, like, I think it's difficult in that large group setting to be able to get some quality information out of a subjective test like the FMS, or just because of the different eyes that could potentially be on it, or the demands of asking somebody to do, you know, hundreds of them in one day or a lot of them in one day, I think can kind of skew some of your information a little bit again. And then from a player perspective as well, just, you know, you're getting a 1, 2, or 3 score, you know, our guys want to be able to shoot for something. They're competitive creatures. And, you know, so you throw them on a force plate, they're like, you know, your output's this. Okay, well, I want it to go up next time, you know, and on a movement screen, you know, a 2's good. Like, a 2 means you're okay. You're not a 3. You might never be a 3, but that doesn't mean that you're underperforming in any way. So it's hard for them to shoot for a improvement in a score. And then on the flip side of that, I think for me, as much as I would love to have some force plates, believe me, I'd love to have them to be able to play around in the private setting. I think that's probably where I'm gonna, I think will be kind of least valuable for me right now, just in part of that as a cost benefit as well. You know, they're very expensive, especially for a newer small business to invest that kind of money, especially when the athletes that I'm working with are just really strength deficient. For like 99% of them are just strength deficient just based off of their training age and their biological age. So I'd probably have to write that one off just for our population in the private setting. But hopefully as we continue on, it's something that we can start to swing that way a little bit more as the athletes get a little bit more proficient.
Chris, if you don't
think
mind,
it's go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah, I was just gonna tag, you know, both your statements there with, you know, and Trevor said it really well. It's like you got to be able to tell athletes why. It's just like we tell our athletes, we got to be able to explain that to the staff. But it's also very important to let them know why not, right? Like with with endurance testing and the demands of baseball, it's important to let them know, like the energy system, you know, capacity is not there for endurance, right? You're an explosive athlete. We need you to be reactive, right? And it's counterintuitive to utilize endurance training capacity going up against the demands of baseball. So I think that why versus why not, I kind of look at that, you know, when we do Con Ed, it's like, yeah, you know, PRI isn't something that I would necessarily utilize in my programs, but I need to know why I shouldn't, because there's going to be athletes out there that are going to ask why we don't do that. You know, we get a guy from a different organization, he's going to come in, you know, I've been doing this for so long. Well, okay, that's great, but you know, here's why we do this instead and why we don't do that. So I think it's important to kind of have, you know, that dichotomy there with both, you know, ideas in mind.
Yeah, that's the nail right on the head right there, is having the whys behind it and explaining it and the why nots. But also, this was something I learned very on in my career, was, you know, learn from all these different things, whether that be PRI, FRC, FRA, on base, you take little bits and pieces. And if you think that that's the way to go, go down that. But cherry pick what you want. There are some good concepts in every little bit. Like, there's not, like, there's good stuff to back up all these things. So having an open mind, taking that information and, okay, I can apply, this does fit into my population, I can do these things. Whereas, like, not being like, oh, well, we can't do that because this doesn't work. Like, for us, we did the FRA. Chris, I think you were there with us last year when we did it. Like, does it fit into our model? Well, we do a joint, our trainers do a joint assessment on guys with, it's Physimax, I think, is the Xbox Kinect thing, and it does a joint by joint thing. But with our force plate stuff, we can look at a guy, hey, he's deficient in concentric impulse. Like, okay, let's do a table test. Let's see how his hips are working with the FRA. But it's not, that's not dictating what his program is. That's just a little subset of what's going on. So, and the other point I want to make is, have your assessments work for your program and have your program work for your assessments. So yesterday we sat down as a staff and decided our whole in-season programming for next year. But a large part of that is we look at the stats of, okay, how are these movements affected by the force plate? So we're looking at scan numbers, the three variables that I touched on earlier. You know, how are these movements corresponding in a positive way? If it's a positive way, we probably don't need to change that tract. If it's a negative way, okay, what do we need to do to change these things so that it does fit and it does help boost that assessment so we can see exactly what these movements or implementations are doing with guys? So have your assessment work for your program is a big thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great point too, to understand, like, you need to at least have a minimum knowledge base of all the different things that are out there, right? Because all of our athletes, you know, are away from us as long as they're with us. And, you know, they're all training with their own trainers in the off season, doing their own, you know, they all have their own methodologies for things and core values. So at least being able to have a base level of understanding so that when you are making your calls and connecting with the players, you have an understanding of what's going on and what they're doing.
Yeah, Trev, having conversations with you in the past, one of the big things I'm glad you guys have hit on it is just the open-mindedness to things. Again, we might do something that you don't like, but the biggest thing is that you have the reason behind why you do it. You can explain it to your players. You can explain it to your staff, your front office. And again, some of the assessments don't necessarily come from specifically the strength staff. Like, the front office might say, hey, you know what? You don't like an endurance test, but guess what? You're doing an endurance test. And it's like, well, you know, what are you going to do? The front office is telling us we need to do something. So now we need to find something that's justifiable that we can explain, like, oh, okay, well, actually we're testing for your recovery ability or this or that or whatever it is. But again, it's having that reason why. And then the other thing that I like that we've talked about is just that you audit your program all the time. It's like you look at your assessments and you see, okay, are these actually contributing to performance with our players? Is it contributing to injuries with our players? Like, how is this assessment giving us insight? And then you're going back and you're making modifications to your programs and things like that. And so for me, I think sometimes people can get bogged down in like, oh, I got to do an FRA assessment, I got to do a jump assessment, I got to do a conditioning, I got to do all these assessments. And then your purpose, your performance indicators kind of get lost in the sauce there because you don't know which one is contributing to which. Like, oh, is that guy's out of shape, that's why he got hurt, or, oh, that guy's a poor mover, that's why he got hurt, or he's weak, that's why he got hurt. Well, which is it? Like, I don't know, because we have 1,000 assessments and none of them are actually giving us the data we want. So I think narrowing it down, and then again, Trev, just to your point, is like, you guys do the force plates, that's it. And you do the force plates extremely well, and you've gone through years and years of adjusting and, you know, auditing your programs to make something into, okay, this is what we believe in, this is why we believe it, and this is what we give to the players, the front office, the coaches, to show, hey, we're making tangible changes.
Yeah, define your action. Like, what's your mandate from the front office? So, like, every time I come back to it, like yesterday in the meeting, and we'll, you know, we're all strength coaches. We like to go down these rabbit holes and start talking, oh, I want to do this plan, I want to do this. And it's, okay, but what is our action? We need to keep players on the field. Like, do we want to boost performance? Yes, that is ideal. But from our front office, the mandate is keep them on the field. Okay, how are we going to best do that? So my action is always, how do I keep this athlete on the field? And if you can't define that, you need to define that before you even go into what your assessments are. Is what is your purpose with these athletes? Is it to boost performance? Because if it is, we can go down some other holes and start really getting into it. But if it's to keep guys on the field or to, you know, mitigate injury, then okay, let's really define what that is. But define what your action is before you start going into these, what the assessment is and what your program is. I think you have to really define that first.
I was going to say the same thing, honestly, is figure out what the purpose of, you know, like, what is your role? What is the strength staff's role? What is the medical staff's role? You know, if you have a, if you've been assigned and dictated this role of, hey, like, we want the strongest players out there on the field, you have direction, right? Or it's, hey, we want to keep them on the field, we want to minimize our injuries this year, now you have direction. And that kind of helps dictate which way your program goes, for sure.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think that it goes to that buzzword communication, right? Like, having a plan established between each and every entity that surrounds the player, right? So if it's the performance staff talking to the PTs, the ATCs, you know, I think a lot of people sometimes, without even noticing it, they'll dive into athlete's range of motion, you know, find something out, but then take it to the PTs, you know, who are supposed to be, you know, like super dialed in on range of motion. You take it to them and they're like, nah, we don't really see that. So I think a lot of what we do is communicate, and having that open line of discussion with each entity in regard to what defines your program. And I think that's super important.
Yeah, and you're starting to see that now with the sport coaches are starting to catch up to where we are. You see the on-base use stuff. You see these coaches actually really educated now in assessments and movement and talking the talk, basically. So for me, I feel like in our organization, you know, we have these coaches, well, I see this with this guy and this and that. What are we doing? What are we doing with this guy? Well, do you watch the warm-up at all? Like, do you watch our stretch? Because there's things that we've defined as KPIs that we do on a daily basis. So if you really intricately watch, and you watch the warm-up, you watch the stretch, you watch the assessment, we are looking at these things. You just don't see it all the time because it's so minute. Because it's important, we've put it in every day. So these sport coaches are starting to get that communication piece and learning how to talk the talk, but it's almost like you're a buffer for these coaches sometimes. It's, hey, like, I do see that. We do know this. We see this with the athlete. It's okay. We are working on it. It takes a while to make some changes with guys. So it's almost being a check for some of these sport coaches, even front office too, is, you know, hey, we are doing these things. It's okay. We got it. Like, right. We know you're excited. Just calm down.
It's like they've discovered something new that we've known for a few years. And then it's like, yeah, it's there. We're doing it. And I think, honestly, you know, going back to what Goldie said, is like, it's communicating. And sometimes that happens of like, a coach will come to you and be like, hey, you know, glute stability is a huge thing, single leg stability, like, for this guy to hit, like, are we doing that? And then you're like, well, yeah, we do that in, you know, all of our programs here, 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 and here. But then you have to think, like, how many times have I sat down with this coach and had this conversation with him or showed him my program, right? Like, we have these strength programs we write, these conditioning programs, the assessments, and sometimes all we show them is just the results that we got. Hey, these guys failed the conditioning test, these guys passed the conditioning test. Like, okay, well, what was their conditioning leading up to that, or something like that? You know, how many times do you have those educational conversations where you actually go over your full program with other people or your full assessment battery with other people so that they actually have a better understanding. And some people don't want to know. They just want to know the results. It is what it is, you know, calling it how you see it. But again, now that coaches are becoming more educated, like you guys are saying, is they're coming to us with stuff and we're like, yes, it's in there. Let's sit down and talk about this in our program and I'll show you where we're doing it. And I think at the end of the day, that only just adds benefit for everybody. And you know, now that the coaches are on board with the strength staff and the ATCs and the front office, everybody's kind of getting into this collaborative approach where it's all about just making the players better and making our program better for the players.
Absolutely. All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part one of our two-part episode that we have here on assessment protocols. I think this is a good place to stop this one, as part two is going to get into more baseball-specific protocols. But in the meantime, I hope you enjoyed this one with the guys. Three things that I took from Trevor, Joe, and Goldie in this episode: be efficient with your assessment protocol. Athletes will buy in more if they understand the why of your assessments, and have a plan established with everybody on your performance team about your assessment protocols and goals. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.